We rolling? Yeah.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Human. We're here with Micah Fink, Navy SEAL, anti-Santa Claus, pro-shark attack advocate. we're gonna talk about his nonprofit, Heroes and Horses. We're going to talk about what I'm learning right now. We just decided to hit the record button because we're sharing too many good stories off camera here. So I thought we would just jump right into it. We were just talking about how you're a competitive spearfisher and you've spearfished all over the world. So let's just pick back up with that conversation.
Yeah. You know, spearfishing is something that just, I spent a lot of time in the mountains on horseback and, a tremendous amount of time in the wilderness. Matter of fact, I've crossed 18 wildernesses to date on horseback. But the real wilderness that is really near and dear to my heart is the ocean. And, it started with a Hawaiian sling at my first SEAL team. I would dive off the piers. I'm pretty sure it was like radioactive, nuclear wastewater, and I would shoot these disgusting fish. I don't even know what they were, but I'd go down there and shoot them and I'd cook them and eat them. And, from there it evolved into this passion where, it just took me around the whole world. And so living in Hawaii, I dove pretty much like 4 or 5 days a week. I lived primarily on fish that I killed and harvested myself. And spearfishing is very selective. People are like, think that spearfish are out there like shooting. First of all, it's hard to hold your breath and dive down to 120 feet and shoot a tuna. It's easy to drive with a net that's like 2 miles long. And I've been out to sea and I was 250 miles off the coast of Panama diving and the currents out there. And, you see these trawlers coming through that are just gobbling up everything. And I mean, anything and everything, they're killing all my underwater friends. And, I'm just joking. I don't really think I travel around the world and I ended up going to Venezuela. That's what I was talking about. And that was an insane, it was the first, it wasn't the first time that I saw people starving. I've been to refugee camps in Iraq and, obviously Afghanistan, all over the world and the war zones I've been to, but Venezuela was different, because it was just like this desperation as there was political change happening really through violence and crisis. And, you go, I felt really bad, like a typical American fashion. We're like 200 miles out in a wooden boat. We ended up having to spend the night just drifting at sea in this boat. I remember the guy brought food, this Venezuelan guy, and I hate mayonnaise. I fucking hate mayonnaise. And he had bread and mayonnaise. That was it. And I'm like, I've been diving all day, a pile full of fish. We're drifting out to sea. I'm just sleeping in my wetsuit on a board on a 15-foot wooden boat with gas tanks and all our dive gear with my buddy. And I remember I was just peeing to stay warm. And I'm like, I was like, comes time to like eat some food. I'm in the water. And the guy's like, and I'm like looking at this. I'm like, he smears it with this warm mayonnaise. There was no cooler or anything. And I just remember like looking at this thing and I was like, I can't eat this shit. Like I can't do it. And I was like, and I felt so bad. Cause then I started thinking like, oh shit, everyone over here is starving, And so I was like, here, you guys can, they were just cutting the fish, eating the meat out there, but it was an amazing experience. I killed a 100-pound barracuda there. I killed a bunch of kubera snapper. I almost drowned. I shot 2 giant snappers. One got wrapped around my leg at like 80 feet. And they tangled all up in me. And it was a wild ride. It was a great time. And at night we would sit there and, listen to the gunfire, that would be happening at night. And we would sit inside there with my buddy and, my spirit animal is an owl. And I know this for a fact, and it always has been in my life. And we're sitting out there in the middle of Venezuela and a miniature white owl appears. And I was like, oh my God, an owl. And the thing leaves and then the thing reappears the next night. And so I Google, I'm like, what happens when you see a white owl like numerous times? And it's like, you'll be shipwrecked and killed. I was like, oh no. So the rest of the time I was there, I kind of had this like looming thing that I was going to die. But anyway, long story short, it was an amazing experience. And, it's something I still do every year, except for this year because of the COVID. I wasn't able to travel overseas. So I rode across country on my motorcycle instead.
I want to speak to you about why Navy SEALs, you guys spend a lot of time in water, obviously, but why this seems to be such a big connection between you guys and the water. But before we even get into that, why did you decide to become a SEAL? I know why, but that's a pretty crazy story.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm a small town kid, grew up in upstate New York. I never wanted to join the military and then like run around and like, you know, pretend to like shoot people or whatever. I'm from New York and I did used to pretend to hit them with bats, but I never wanted to do that. I became a lineman. I played drums in a ska band. I was a funk drummer. It was pretty serious drummer actually. I thought I was going to become like a professional drummer. That's what I kind of wanted to do. I boxed my whole life. As a matter of fact, I learned to box at Catskill Village Boxing, same place Mike Tyson learned to box. It was 9 miles from my house. And I became a telephone pole lineman, and I was at the World Trade Centers. I was in Queens, New York, in a telephone pole when the first plane hit the World Trade Centers on 9/11. So I was like 60 feet up on a railroad pole, and I saw the smoke, and I ended up going into New York City. I was there when the Citibank Tower fell, pulled out a dead police officer, a torso. I saw some arms and stuff like that. And, you know, the next day I sat there with my friend on September 12th, and to this day, I'll never forget what I said. He goes, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "I'm going to fucking kill whoever did this." And then he was like, "Okay, dude, like, I think we're like listening to like Chumbawamba or something at the time." And he's like, and I did, I joined the military and I enlisted and I didn't really know what the SEAL teams were. They weren't that big of a deal back then. You know, you didn't have a book deal, a movie deal, a book and a movie deal. You didn't have a, you know, write kids books. Like, you know, nobody, it was a clandestine warriors. And I got poached out of the line to join the Army by a Navy recruiter. So I joined up, signed up, showed me a video that totally lied to me. And I thought the whole time we were doing all this training, there'd be death metal playing. Apparently there's not. So I joined up and graduated 13 original guys out of my class that started and finished with me. And, you know, that kind of led to obviously a major transformation in my life. And I have a picture that I posted some months back on my Instagram. And my friend took that picture, and that was my second deployment. And I remember I was actually standing there looking, and underneath my sunglasses, you couldn't tell I had tears coming down my eyes, because I thought about when I said that to my friend. I kind of joke about it now, but I think that was really me just realizing, like, I'm not going to be a victim. Like, this is not going to be where I'm going to stop. This is, my life is not going to end here. And I'm not going to be, you know, on CBS Evening News talking about, you know, the smoke, you know, 20 years later, that I was going to fight back, whatever it meant. I wasn't really sure, but it was just my propensity to, I think there's only really two kinds of people in the world. It's the kind of person that gets punched in the face and then like cowers. And there's the other person that gets punched in the face and says, "Now I'm going to punch you in the face harder," like, "or you're going to have to kill me." And so, you know, that, that mentality I didn't realize at the time led me to the career that, you know, I eventually ended up having.
13 deployments, Iraq, Afghanistan. You've seen a lot, you've experienced a lot. You've done a TEDx talk on what it's like to come back from hotspots and war zones like that, on PTSD. So this kid from upstate New York that came back from some of the worst life experiences a person can have. How do you find your way back from PTSD? Because there's a lot of people, including myself, that have PTSD.
Yeah, I agree. This is my take on that. So, you know, I had two careers. I was in the SEAL teams. I did a couple of deployments in there. I got out, ended up getting recruited over to a paramilitary unit from one of our clandestine agencies that exist in the world. I did a lot of deployments for them all around the world, you know, and, you know, I think the hardest thing is that when that ends, I think there's a lot of things that happen. First, I think that life is trauma. I think life is trauma. I think that you don't have to be a soldier to know that life can be brutal and vicious and violent. It can be loving and amazing and beautiful the next second. I think it's a part of our development as human beings to be exposed to difficulties that give us the opportunity to make choices that teach us about who we are. And in that knowledge that we gain allows us to overcome our external circumstances. But I think that before that, I posted a quote today where I said, develop your psychological immune system. And I kind of had that thought yesterday. I think so much we focus on symptoms rather than understanding. And I think that the more difficult the situation and the circumstance, the more we have to focus on discovering who we are. And so before you can have self-help, there has to be self-discovery. But before that process starts, at least in the veterans world, you know, you have a 1 in 6 chance of getting prescribed psychiatric medications, a 1 in 6 chance. And so the moment you set foot in there, that you have that 1 in 6, I think it's probably higher than that because I don't believe the shit that they put out there. By the end of this year, since 2005, 144,000 vets will have committed suicide. 6,900 died in the war. There's 45,000 nonprofits. And last year we spent $7 billion on those nonprofits. So my thing is that it's not about money and we don't need any more programs that could swing a dead cat right now and hit 37 programs that save vets. And my message is that I can't save you. I can't do anything for you, but I can put you in a situation where you learn how to do for yourself. And that's evolution. And that's mindset training but you can't help what you don't know. You can't help what you don't know. And sometimes we have to be broken to a point where the only place that we have to look anymore is in. Because when you run to the end of perpetual ideas of people that weren't your own, you're left like in total despair. Like it didn't work. It didn't happen. You know, Betty didn't take me back or whatever it is. And so you have a society of people that just reflect and regurgitate other people's ideas, but they don't have any of their own. Because self-discovery is very hard, as you know, right? It's a deep dive into who I am, right? The most complex and systematically organized organism on the face of the earth, right? That has enough cells inside that if you stretch them from end to end, it would go from here to the moon and back 148,000 times. Like, okay, so if I don't get 6 steps to success, I'm not going to make it. Thanks, Bob. But like, no thanks. And you know, we are addicted, you know, we have master's degrees in other people's ideas. So back to like PTS and, you know, I don't think it's a permanent disability. I think that, you know, we give it this label and look, if I didn't tell you that, you know, I looked at one point, like the kind of guy that would chew his way out of a cardboard box and then like, you know, run through a wall, you know, just to, cause he heard a loud noise in the office, I would be lying to you. You know, I lived at that level where I was perpetually running a marathon, like all day, every day of my life. I was just like in a state of, you know, I came home from my last deployment, you know, as a paramilitary guy, contractor, and it was rough. You know, we had a bunch of guys get killed. I was in some significant gunfights that were very violent, very deadly. And, you know, then I came home and it's like, you know, that was my total, you know, time. It was my 13th deployment. My wife picked me up at the airport and was like, took one look at me and was like, just like broke into tears. And I saw like pock marks in my neck and stuff like that from the battle I was just in. And she could just sense this energy that was just radiating from me. I'd become so programmed to live in one world that when I came back to this world, I felt out of place. And what it is programming. Right? You get programmed, you enter the program. So if I enter the program, like press enter, I walk in, the first thing they do is shave my head, take all my money away, take all my clothes away, and then make me talk in a certain language. And I'm constantly being yelled at and applied pressure applied to me. As soon as I make it through that little program, then they're like, oh, this guy did good in this program. So maybe we'll like move you over here and you scale up in the programs, right? And then until you get to the point where you're the best at killing people. That's the end. I mean, that's what it is. Like I'm like the best at killing people. So it's like, oh, okay, cool. And then, you know, we just keep moving up in those things. And then all of a sudden the program ends. You've been in the program for 15 years of your life through various programming. And then all of a sudden you come home and you're home for a weekend. I was like, you made it back. What are you so pissed off about? And I'm like, okay, I've been at a program for 15 years. I arrived here and I got some like meat balloon pushed in front of me a line, like, because, you know, I'm just trying to buy cheddar bunnies for my kids because I love them. And, you know, and then everybody's like, oh my God, this guy needs medications. He needs, and then, so then there's a system where you have this magical substances that are created in labs far away that are highly addictive and change your conscious relativity. Like, you're not living in this conscious reality. You're living in an altered conscious reality. So then, okay, that feels weird, but physiologically I'm kind of addicted to that. And it makes me not have to deal with actual reality. So then we have people get to a point where, you know, I've guys show up here in 11 psychiatric meds and they, you know, they're killing themselves at exponential rates. And he's like, well, why? We can't understand. Well, it's the war. It's not the war. It's the programming in the system to unprogram people. And that's what's killing them. So, you know, it's the hardest, facing that was the hardest thing that I ever had to do. And look at, I mean, I don't need to tell you that, you know, of everything that you've been through, but once you're in, the only way is through, no matter what it is. And, you know, I decided to do something different. And I decided to go on a journey where I began to really understand who I am as a person. And as I gained that knowledge, I fought those battles. I suffered my way to grace and happiness. I suffered my way there. Nobody like showed up and like threw me the keys to the vehicle. You know, I was out there with a pickaxe, and if I would be lying, if I didn't say it, just almost didn't crush me. I mean, I was going down the road one time, like going through this process when I first created this organization, and I just like opened up the door and like rolled out of my truck down into a ditch until my truck came to a thing. I just like laid there in the grass and I was just like cried and like screamed and like laid on the side of a ranch road and just like lost it, you know? And then I like sat up and I'm like staring at the moon. I'm the only person in the middle of nowhere in Montana, 3 o'clock in the morning. Here I am like pulling the grass out, like tough guy, like Navy SEAL, like dude, buy my book, like check it out, like kill everybody, like woo, like, and here I am in the grass, like alone, like crying. And that's when I had the realization that the harder it's going to get, the more I realize I'm actually doing the right thing. And when my mindset changed as it relates to the obstacles and challenges I was facing, it became easier. And by easier, I mean harder, but it became harder for it to become easier and easier for it to become harder all at the same time. And those challenges present themselves, and now the mindset's so different, and those obstacles, they're my greatest allies. You know, they are, they're my great, I don't, wouldn't wish anything for any different. Even the people that screwed me over, bent me over, you know, did whatever, not, they didn't actually bend me over. Wouldn't allow that. All right. But, I'm thankful for those. And it's so hard when you're in the midst of the storm to be like, have that mindset. And it's easy to sit back, you know, when you're like at the big convention and telling everybody face your fears, like, woo, it's like you get back in your Learjet and like fly away and Bob and Cindy are heading back to, you know, Wisconsin, like, oh shit, like, is this going to work? And at the end of the day, you have to live your life. It's a very short life. I always tell people like, I'm not going to be stressed out about shit anymore because I'm dead in like 38 years statistically. Like, I'm not even worried about it. Like, I'll pass on to another dimension or whatever's going to go down. And I'm like totally okay. But I have a mission to do here. And the map to my mission exists inside of me. It's nowhere else. The things that happen to me are signs. Maybe I chose this life. Who knows? Like, but the roadmap, I am fundamentally convinced, is actually in here. It's not out there. Out there is a distraction and there's a weird game. Whoever collects the most gold coins wins the game, when actually you're the biggest loser because you've traded your time for the most precious thing on earth. You've traded your time. And, you know, at times in my life, maybe I bought into that system. I don't know. But today, I mean, I went on record like, I don't know, a few months ago, I'm like never buying clothes again. I'm like, it's a stupid thing. Unless it's like pertains to like climbing Mount Everest or doing like other, you know, I'm an Iron Man or, okay. I'll get some specific things because I want to do that, but I'm not buying stuff to look So if anyone wants to send me any clothes or sponsor me with clothes, like, I'm going to be hurt in about a year. But I just was like, the other day, I was like wearing shit. My wife's like, you've had those shorts for 13 years. And I was like, yeah, they're a little tight, but whatever. And I just laughed because I was like, I'm going to look at everything for what it is. And I'm going to focus on discovering that map on the inside. So
love it. I love it. So your nonprofit that you did start, Heroes and Horses, you have a documentary that's out on YouTube called 500 Miles. I'm going to try not to spoil it, but it's got to do with horses, and it's not about 400 miles and it's not about 600 miles. So it's horses, it's vets. Tell us about what you do with the horses. You have, how many horses do you have?
So he has 64 right now. Yeah. 64. If anybody wants one, I got one that I'm trying to get rid of right now. So I'll pay to ship it to you. So we did the five, we work with wild Mustangs. The program that I run today, we've been running for 7 years. It's called Heroes and Horses. It's a 41-day reintegration self-discovery course that uses high pressure, stress, time, and horses to shift focus from the addiction of looking out for answers to looking in for answers. And so that happens over 41 days. So there's no, it's a whole 30 diet model while they're here, whole 40, as we call it. So there's no dairy, no cheese, no juice, nothing. It's just meat and vegetables, black water and coffee. Average guy loses 18 pounds. We've had guys lose 40 pounds in 41 days here, weighed and tracked. Came off 11 psychiatric meds. Every day starts at 4:30 in the morning with meditation, then physical fitness that we do with our partner, Jim Jones. Then they get into an ice tank and they do breathing, and then they get, and then now it's 6:30 in the morning and you can have your black coffee and water and meat and vegetables. And then it's horses. Average guy rides 500 miles plus in this program. That's just an average. Some guys do a lot more than that. And, we use wild Mustangs. The film you're talking about is the story of the unpurposed horse and the unpurposed human being, and how purpose allows people and horses to overcome their external circumstances. So, you know, the American Mustang is facing the same thing the American veteran's facing: tons of money and lots of programs, but none of them work. And so, you know, our answer is to just throw huge chunks of money at things and not be results driven. And, you know, I kind of found out what the world was doing as it pertained to veterans, and I did the opposite. And look, at if you're 50 pounds overweight, you play video games all day, drink Monster energy drinks, eat Snickers bars all day, you don't work, you collect a paycheck, you got out of the Marine Corps in 2006 and you have trouble sleeping, brother, it ain't the war. Okay. It just, you have to, like, there's a point, right, where there has to be personal agency and you have to take ownership of your life. And so we create the perpetual victims. And, you know, we actually, like I was saying before, we help people to death. We help them to death. We help them so much they die. And that's a reality. So, you know, I started this organization because I always tell people, I think, like, now looking back, I selfishly started this organization. First of all, I didn't even know what a nonprofit was. All right. So, like, don't act like I, like, you know, was my whole career. Like, when I get out, I'm going to start a nonprofit. I'm like, who would want to do that? There's no profit. Like, what, how do you even live? And I found that out the hard way. So, but what I needed didn't exist. And so I just created it for myself initially. Just like the reason why I joined the military, like, I created it for myself. Dude, you better get that, man. It could be Domino's.
I turned that off. Just
shout, like, out to Domino's, man. Dropping off free pies.
I got my phone and it was in here in the office and I just turned that off. Sorry about that. Especially on such an
important. Okay, here I am talking about the diets and stuff. The pizza guy walks in the background like, this is great tips.
One thing that keeps popping in my head as you're talking about this, like embrace the pain, embrace the grind. You said trauma is life.
I didn't say, like, that.
Didn't say embrace the grind.
No.
You said trauma is life.
I don't use that word grind. All right. Cause I'm a flow guy. I think it's more a flow than a grind. I think if you're grinding, I think you're wrong. I don't think you're working with the energies and the life force that exists around us, the people. I think we've lost our intuitiveness as human beings. I think we're not intuitive enough. I think we're basically walking around with, 80% of our best assets switched off, and we live in our analytical mind. So no, I know a lot of people say grind, like wake up every day, grind, brother. And it's like, that's not me. I'm like a flow guy.
Dude, I love that. That's a perspective shift for me right there. I'm gonna borrow that from you.
Yeah.
But like, what about like the temptation of not relaxation, but like complacency? You know, like I feel like that's something that I struggle with too.
It's an elixir. Look at psychologically, right? You know that doing the hard thing's good for you, right? So why do you think, you know, I always use this example. Why do we think we invented these struggle machines? We literally have struggle machines, right? You like enter the amount of struggle that you want, like a treadmill, and then you do your struggle. And then on the way home, while you have your protein shake, you call up your friend and tell them the struggle that you just did, right? Why do you think they have obstacle course races? It's actually obstacles. And then Monday morning you show up and like, what's up? Just did an obstacle. Like, whoa, man, you jumped over a log and got tased. Like, crazy. I want to do that. And then you build a business around it. Right. So struggle gives every single thing in life value. It's what gives us the opportunity to peek inside and get a glimpse of that roadmap that I was talking about. But unfortunately, we're looking at struggle the wrong way. So like here we are watching struggle TV, right? Naked and Afraid or whatever. Like we're watching Alone, we're watching struggle, we're respecting struggle. And the whole time vicariously, we wonder, wow, what would it be like if I went through like a fight camp and then got in there with Francis Ngannou? You'd be turned into pink dust. Let's just face it. But anyway, like we always wonder, right? That's why the best parts of all the Rocky movies are always the montage, right? He always dips down, but then all of a sudden he's just like, he's going to start catching those chickens. He's in the back beating up meat and he's training and now he's going to fight the big obstacle and defeat it. It's all the same. But today the elixir is that life is too easy. Life is too easy. You know, I was like having some beef with, you know, I'm married. I'm always having beef. So like, but I was like having some beef and I was like with my wife and I was like, you know what? People probably didn't do this back in the day because like, you know, everyone was dropping dead from cholera. If the cabbage farm didn't come in or the natives surrounded your ranch, you were killed. Like you were getting water and your mule died. Like you had other problems. You weren't like, hey, let's take the weekend and go to a relationship symposium. Like, you know, you had some like other, you had some other things. We have two, life is too easy. So it's this elixir that gets us into manufacturing. Let's face it, we manufacture conflict because struggle is a part of our evolution as people. So we literally manufacture it. But then on the other side of the coin, we create a life where it's so easy. You could be born in North America and never leave your couch. You could just morph into some kind of blobby, hybrid, cyber, you know, consumer of soybean oil machine that lays there and just like consumes. Right? Because the system will take care of you. You don't actually have to do anything. You can't live like that. You'll die. We actually need to, you know, kids need to fall down, right? This is all very simple things. This isn't like profound stuff. It's just, it's obvious that this is how the system designed it. So what happens is complacency because it's, your body's designed to really do two things, right? Pass on the gene pool and conserve calories. So it's like, do I want to run down a white-tailed deer over the course of 15 hours until it lays down and dies and then eat this organic deer and like take it home to my family? Or do I want to go to In-N-Out Burger and get 3,000 calories for $4 of my time? If I have $4 of my time, actually it's probably 10 bucks. So I have $10 of my time. So, cause this is what money is. Money is your time, right? So I'm like, okay. Ooh, I like this car, Mercedes CLK MG kit. Like how much of my time? 150,000 of my time. That's what it is. I'll pay it off in 5 years. 5 years. First 4 years of your life, you're in diapers, pooping your pants, like eating shit off the floor, trying not to choke, right? And the last 10 years of your life, you're doing the same thing. So what's happening in the center, right? Like, okay, we don't really have a lot of time, but then they have all these things to make life easier. And then you don't discover. So then at the end of life, you develop the worst disease known to man. You develop fear because you starting to recognize that you didn't do the right things with your time, but then it's too late. It's too late. The games got you. You bought into the elixir. You didn't take the hard right. You took the easy left in life. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people want to say like, I am, you know, people want to brag and on Navy SEALs. I'm like, so great. Look, I'm a regular guy. I'm a regular guy. I wake up and put my pants on. I make gold records. No, I'm kidding. But like, there's only two kinds of people in life. There's the people that either accept something or don't accept it. And that's it. And that comes down to choice. And choice is the superpower that we all have, our ability to make a choice. But are you going to go for the burger? Or are you going to walk the deer down? Which one is going to help you? You make that choice and you live with the consequences of it. And it's by no volition of the challenge or the obstacles you face. I can't blame my problems for my childhood, you know, the shit that I got into, the military, the gunfights, PTSD, the VA, all these things have happened in my life. The people screwing me over, the sharks, the liars, the charlatans, the crooks, the bums, like whatever. I have a super ability to utilize a roadmap that I was born with and discover it by facing those obstacles and using them as magnifiers into who I am. And the freedom from anything, the beat the game is to know thyself. That's you're beating the game at that point. Then everything else becomes irrelevant. So why does one side of the coin, you have Gandhi, he basically ascends to this greater understanding of life and the universe. He's wearing a robe, but then we say that success is, whatever guy like Jeff Bezos, that's, you know, $200 billion and probably eating babies and worshiping elves. Who knows? I don't know. Shout out to Jeff. Yo, give me some cheese. I think like it's weird because that shows that it's going to make life easier. So we pursue this game. We pursue these things because we think it's going to be easier because we're designed to serve calories and pass on the gene. We have these propensities. But if we go against that, how do you grow muscles? You destroy them and they actually grow when you sleep and you rest. But there has to be a damage cycle, a catabolic effect. There has to be a spiritual catabolic effect. You know, you got to get outside your analytical mind, which is your worst enemy because it's polluted with social constructs that come from a place that are manufactured by people, and live intuitively and flow with life. You know, if it's all about grind, invest in Snapchat, get out there, get to the top. It's like, cool. You're dying just like everybody else in a little box. And like, wow, like cool. Like sweet app. And there's something we're missing, the greater metaphor of life that is going to help us ascend to the next place where we're going. This is a proving ground, in my humble opinion.
So you clearly
done I'm keeping it light, man. I'm just keeping it light. I don't want to get too serious.
You clearly have gone through this. You've done some serious soul searching to get to this spot. But say you are Joe in Ohio who you know has not face the adversities that you faced. How do you, because it's not easy, right? When you have access to all these ways of making life easier, when you have access to an escalator and an elevator instead of stairs, when you have a bird, you don't even have to walk, you have those scooters, you don't have to walk 50 yards anymore. Like we have it easier than any generation before us, and everything continues to get easier and easier. How do you create that mindset, that warrior mindset, when you have never been faced with true adversity? And then one day life hits you in the face with adversity that you didn't think or were prepared for, or didn't think was going to happen to you. What do you do? Well, some people are living in right now with the pandemic.
Well, listen, you got to spend time with yourself. That's it. I'm like, the biggest stranger that you have in your life is yourself. Like, you don't need to, you know, go out and run through the desert for 98 days and eat a tub. You can, right? Like you can do those things because look at that's the hero's journey, right? The hero's journey. Look, if we wanted to get like radical and people like, I'll do anything to change my life, I'm like, great. Call me up after this. I'll tell you exactly what to do. But you're not going to do it. You just want the outcome, right? I just want to be the CEO of the company. I don't want to, like, you know, go through the board wars and the stock wars and turn in IPOs and do it. My kids, they hate me. And Betty left me. I got 9 girlfriends, Corvette, bro. Like, now I'm the CEO. I made it. And all we do is we come in, we're like, that should be me. Yeah. It's like, where were you? You didn't earn it. You didn't do shit. And we want the byproduct. We want to know what it's like to win the marathon without running the marathon, right? By the way, shout out to the Heroes and Horses Marathon that's coming out. Get your asses out there. Forget 22 pushups a day for bets. Do a marathon. I just
come back to that because I want to.
We're going to come back to that. So,
yeah.
I love what you did with your kicks, and you know, I followed that journey. By the way, it was awesome. And you know, my buddy hit me up, and he tagged me in some stupid ass post or something. He was like, he's an Army Ranger, and if he's listening, you know it's you. And so he's like, yeah, I've been asked to do 22 pushups, you know, for vets every day, you know, bring awareness to PTSD. I'm like, the world knows there's PTSD. I'm pretty sure, like, we all, like, if you lived, you know, if you've lived this life, there, you've, like, you know what PTSD is, right? Like, there's hardships for everybody. And I was like, what is that really? You're not really doing. My son, who's 6, did 101 pushups the other day, unbroken. Okay. He's the toughest little ranch kid. You know, we got 48 chickens, 15 horses, 2 ponies, 4 dogs, 20 guinea hens. Like, we got, it works like an, you know, it comes over my friends and I was like, don't hook the strap up that way. Give me the ratchet. Like, you got to use a welder on that. Like, what are you doing? You know, my buddy's like, Jesus, like, dude, your kid, like, I feel like an idiot. And, you know, he's like, another kid challenged him on social, and I'm going on a tangent right now, but like, challenged on social. And he's like, did like 5 pushups. He's like, I challenge Micah Jr. to doing this. And he does like 6. And by the way, in the other kid's defense, I punish my kids by putting them in the push-up position for huge periods of time. Matter of fact, and I've left, they've been in there. My son could stay in there for 20 minutes without thinking about it, front leaning rest. Matter of fact, the wrestling coach says he's the strongest kid that he's ever had in wrestling. But that means he gets in trouble all the time. So I don't know. But anyway, you know, he does 101. So I'm like, my buddy's a ranger. He's doing these 22 push-ups. He's a vet. And I'm like, look it. It has nothing to do with helping vets. It has nothing. It has to do with, look at what I'm doing for others, right? It has nothing to do with true, systematic, quantifiable, and quantitative change, right? That's a little too deep. I've got a job, Bill, I got to go to. You know, it's if you want to do something for somebody else first, you have to do for yourself, because you're not really helping anybody, right? You have to save yourself from drowning before you can save the other people from drowning. And that's essentially what I did. There was no secret roadmap. I began spending time with myself, and I began to understand who I was as a person. And that's where the mindset, you know, it changed. You got to cultivate that mindset. You got to learn to turn off your analytical mind. And when something inside you says, do this, you got to do it. You got to feed it. Even if you're wrong, you got to put that fear aside. And I've really focused on that, especially in most recent times of my life. If I get a gut impression before my analytical mind can switch on really quick and be like, dude, don't call him. I do it. Right? Like, I'll do it. I'll feed it. And then the next thing I know, I get to know my voice. It becomes very clear. And then I'm not even like my analytical mind becomes less relevant. Like, it becomes less relevant. I can just see things for what they are. I can see people for what they're saying. I can see where they're coming from. And, you know, that to me is the beginning of self-development. And if every single person thought like that, and we got outside of these social constructs, these manufactured ideas, the stuff that we're sold and told, the world would change. $1 billion is not the answer. 1 billion minds coming together collectively and establishing a conscious awareness about what matters in this life we're not going to be out rioting and smashing and killing and raping and bombing and burning and doing all these things, right? We're going to start to recognize a much higher level of existence right here. But can we get there? I don't know. Like you said, complacency, cheeseburgers, it's all very enticing and it's very easy. But my simple message is that the easy way kills you. It kills you every time you die. The easy way kills you.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, me too. Sorry I'm so quiet. I'm just sitting here processing. This is really good stuff, Mike. I really appreciate this.
I don't have the – my thing is like, look, I don't have any answers for anybody. I'm just saying you have the answers, right? You only know what you need for your – I could possibly not know what you need. Like, maybe I could provide insight if you ask me something, but like breaking and training horses, it has to be their own idea, right? So the old way, like you saw in the film, was force, fear, and repetition, right? And that was the way. You made them do it. You made slaves to it. That's what we have. A bunch of slaves running around, you know, myself included. I've been a slave to so many things, you know, that have done nothing but harm my life. And, you know, we think of, there's all kinds of forms of slavery, right? We're so afraid. Like I was talking about, like not buying clothes anymore. I was like, why am I working to buy things to make me appear a certain way? If I was really going to like, oh, I see that guy, MMA guy, Orange County, like, oh, that guy's a Harley guy. That guy's a hockey guy. Like, and I got the hockey gear. I got to have, when really, none of that really matters because that's not actually who you are. Just because you have the big foam finger, it doesn't mean you're like a basketball player, right? So like it's these little mechanisms that we get involved, these little subcultures we get involved, and then we spend all our time trying to portray something that we're not, rather than saying, wait a second, instead of collecting all these coins so I can go out and look a certain way, why don't I take that same amount of time and invest it into myself? Spend time with myself, like begin to know my own voice. Like, what is that voice? And when you do, your whole life changes. It changes like instantaneously. There's no like waiting for the aha. Life is an aha moment. There is no aha, like aha. There's only you failing to see the messages that life's been telling you the whole time. You're just too dumb to realize it. So like, I mean, I've been, you know, I'm like, oh man, okay, I got that. I'm like, I should have learned that 10 years ago. Dumbass, like, you know, and it's all because I just was like doing what I was supposed to do. You know, I'm like, and there is no supposed to do. There's you and your existence. And when you gain that knowledge, then you have a responsibility to give it to the rest of the world. And that's how we make the world a better place.
Do you miss the ocean living in Montana?
Dude, I got the mountains, is, you know, everything's a wilderness, but like I have spent so much time living in the backcountry here in remote wilderness and bear country and all over the place. It is a special place. You know, I've gone. Yeah. I miss the ocean, but yeah, I have another ocean here, and, but it's definitely not the same. And so I do think at the next, whatever the chapter is in my life, like, when the whole pandemic or whatever ends, like, you know, I'm going to start carving out more time. I've always had this goal that I've always been working towards to take my family and sail around the world and do it for basically super cheap. And then I want to spearfish my way around the world and show them the world before it turns into something that I won't recognize. And so, you know, people are like, well, what are you going to, how are you going to, I don't know. I don't have any money. I don't know. I don't do it. But I'll tell you right now, I'm going to do it because what you believe, you become. That's why we had went to the moon and first started with a guy believing that we could go up there and get the cheese off of it. So like there's, I don't think the moon's really made of cheese. I mean, it could be, but whatever. But that's, I set these goals. I get these beliefs. I begin to do everything as if it's already happening. And I begin to just live it over and over. And then it materializes and happens. So what you believe, you become. So your belief system is a very powerful thing. So I will return to the ocean, even if it's like as a slightly chubby aging male with his kids, I will do that.
I know this is a big question, but you just said you want to do that before the world changes as you know it.
Yeah.
And it's obviously changing right before our eyes, but are you like, what do you predict?
Well, that's a big question, right?
Yeah.
What do I predict? So, I mean, I would have to, I guess on a high level, like on the highest level, since that question was kind of high level, I guess I would say that society's changing. It always has changed. It always will change. Everything changes, right? You woke up and went, you know, you went to bed last night, you woke up and the world already changed. You know, you learned something right now, you've already changed. You've just changed. I've just changed, right? Like we're changing that quickly. So to think that things last forever is a social construct, right? Like just think about what was happening just like a couple people ago. Like think about my great grandfather. What was he experiencing, right? Like what was life like then? You know, people had wooden teeth three people ago. Like George, the first president of this country, like think about, we have to step outside and realize that we are always in a state of flux. I think the interesting thing that's happening right now is the global change that's happening all at the same time, right? So socioeconomic change, political change, financial infrastructure change, you know, this whole, all this race war that you see is like beginning to happen, which has nothing to do with racism, in my opinion. Everything's in a state of flux, and what's going to come out on the other end is going to be, I don't even think there is a normal, right? Because a normal, nothing's normal, because normal means that it's a constant, right? So like, what's the constant? Like that's just a manufactured constant. You know, everyone's like, thinks that we have this form of security when it's just security and an idea, because you have brief windows of time to say, this is how things are, right? So things have always been this way. So they're going to continue to be this way. And I accept change for what it is, but I think that the United States is on the brink of falling into a civil conflict. And I think that foreign agitators are already involved. I think they'll continue to be involved. And I think it behooves their nations to undermine the United States, as there's nothing short of a race for power happening globally. Like, and it has been since, you know, I mean, look at what China did to their own people in the great leap forward, the Chinese Industrial Revolution. You know, 70 million people died, 30 million people of starvation alone, as they progressed their nation forward to a nuclear superpower, right? That was his vision and goal. And so think about what those people went through. So there's huge change coming. And I think that, you know, people should recognize where they're going to fall in the midst of that change, and think about preparing themselves before it gets to a point where I think it will start. I think once it gets totally out of control, here's something for you. When I think it gets totally out of control, I think you'll see a manufactured food shortage. If you look at what we did to the native people here, President Ulysses S. Grant said that every dead bison is a dead Indian, right? So they killed 30 million bison to control their food source. And then we, you know, obviously put them after that onto reservations, and then we controlled the food. So when they got out of hand, what did we do? Oh, the wagons start coming. Oh yeah, we got broke up wagon wheels, misbehaving a little bit, right? And then we had this little lever, right? Oh, not misbehaving. Why? Because I want to eat, because it's a single source that I have now my food. And we wiped out 30 million, the largest extinction of any land animal on the planet ever. We wiped them out just to pacify another population. So if you don't think that's a reality, you know, good luck.
You're done. I'm driving to Montana when that happens. We'll fly back to Sweden.
Dude, you come bring your gang. Hey, bring your gang up here. We got elk. We got deer. We'll be living it up, man. We'll have our own little fortress up here. It's going to be sweet. I'm actually kind of stoked because I want to live through some shit. I already went through the global war on terrorism. I did all those things, like clandestine operations. Like, hey, I'm like, okay. But now it's like, hey, man, it could be like Mad Max. You know, I've always wondered, like, you know, Wolverines, like, this could be kind of sweet. You know, there could be hordes of people with skins on, like looking for food. Like, you reached the Northern Front. Like, you're not welcome here. Like, you know? So, listen, it really could be a reality, and I'm good either way because I'm on the mission within. So, you know, I'm like, whatever comes, I'll be ready to address it with my super consciousness that I was born with.
You know, it's crazy. We were off the grid in Costa Rica in, I think it was 2010. I remember I was supposed to fight and I had this big cut between my eyes from knuckle that happened. And I came down to Costa Rica and it's amazing to see how far you've come, you know, because you're a good guy. You've always been a good guy. But like you said yourself, there was a cloud of darkness that hung over. And it's fairly easy to recognize when you know what you're looking for. But it's amazing to see your journey and to see where you come to. And I know there's one thing that a lot of people that listen to this want to hear. I think this has been amazing for a lot of people. I think a lot of people learn from this. But there's one thing that has nothing to do with this, and that's your sparring with Ray Mercer.
Yeah, so, you know, grew up, you know, boxing on and off. I fought in the amateurs, undefeated in the amateurs. And, you know, grew up in upstate New York, big boxing. You know, my dad was super into boxing and I didn't play any other sports. I still can't throw a football. I've only ever watched one football game in my whole life. And that's when the Atlanta Bengals went to, just kidding. The Atlanta Falcons went to the Super Bowl because the owner of that team is a friend of mine. He has a ranch here in Montana, Arthur Blank. Shout out to Arthur Blank. Great guy. Love him. So I watched it, and of course they lost or whatever, but I'd never watched football or anything. Boxing was like what I did. And look at, you know, I mean, you're a decorated career fighter. Like the oldest sport that's never going away is just beating another dude or another gal, whatever. Like it's just the oldest thing. You could just get in someone's basement and say, hey, there's a fight. And I could walk around this little development here. And I guarantee you people from the development, even the lady that cooks cookies over here is going to be like, I'll watch these dudes hit each other, right? It's like Lionheart with Van Damme, you know, like in fighting in a swimming pool. People would just beat the shit out of each other, and I love that about people. And I think it's awesome. And so, you know, that was the sport for really like poor kids. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, and you know, if you could go in there and you could fight, they would kind of pay attention to the old school boxing gyms. And you didn't have to pay $85 a month. You know, you had to go in there and fight. So I've been boxing on and off most of my life, joined the military, and got sent to 18 Delta, which is a special operations medical school in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And so there was a boxing gym by my house, an old school boxing gym, you know, and kind of like your Mick kind of characters. And it was this guy, Khalid Shaquille. He was like a middleweight champion belt holder, some WBC, like, He was a little guy. He was a flyweight. But anyway, I started boxing there. And so I had three fights there while going through that course, three wins by knockout. And then I got invited to fight in the North Carolina State Prison Circuit. So anyway, that's a funny Ray Mercer story. So I go there and I remember I'm warming up with my coach. And I'm looking at this dude that I'm going to do this exhibition with. And he was a very scary, he's serving like 17 to life or something. And he just had muscles that I didn't even know human beings could develop. Like they just were like, he had like eyebrow muscles. And I was like, I remember I'm warming up and I couldn't even like get my combos in or anything. Cause I was just like, I kept like getting out of breath. Cause I was like, I like some anxiety. And then everyone, you know, the prison boxing programs are serious business. Like guys are in there, like, you know, they want to fight and get out. So there's a lot at stake. You know, that's how Bernard Hopkins, like guys like that came up out of the prison program. He was serving 18 year sentence, got let out after 5 years and, you know, never turned around. He's one of the greatest of all time, B-Hop. But, you know, so these dudes are in there real serious. So I get in there, I fight this guy, goes to a draw. And I remember the guy like gave me a big hug. And I was like, don't hold too long, dude. And he gave me a hug and Ray Mercer was there. So Ray Mercer and his coach, and Ray had some legal troubles, you know, of course, you know, and he was Merciless. Ray Mercer is noted as one of the most brutal knockouts in boxing history, where he knocked out Tommy Morrison. If you go back and you watch the video, he got his arm caught in the rope, and Ray Mercer was Olympic gold medalist, undefeated, lost his title to Lennox Lewis. And he beat that dude. Like, you know, he he put a beating on him. And so Ray was going to be getting back in shape. And his coach asked me, they saw me fight and they asked if I would be a sparring partner. So I started boxing with Ray a couple times a week. And that's the hardest I've ever been hit in my life. I mean, I've never been hit like that. So I have a great picture on my computer. It's this old picture. I've taken like a Canon camera and it just looks like I'm just like slipping this, like jabbing, like coming low. I'm too tall at the time. I'm looking, I was like, God, that's terrible. But like, it looks like I'm just smashing Ray and he's kind of got a belly and he's out of shape. But like immediately after that, and that's why photos lie and Instagram's all lies. But like the second, what happens a split second after, you know, like that's what I want to know. He clubbed me so hard. I'd never been knocked. I've only been knocked out once in my life. And that was in a street fight outside my mom's house. And I flicked off this like college kid and knocked me out. Cold cocked me. And, I was like, I took a knee for the first time in the ring where I was just like, what? And I remember him like looking over me with his like gold tooth. He's like, come on, get up, like bite down. Like, you know, and I was just like, it hurts so bad. Like, and I was just like, I mean, he's zonked me. So I used to hang out with Ray and he would always like, he would forget that I was active duty in the military as Navy SEAL, like, you know, and he would always try to give me these life tips about not doing crack and staying away from whores. And like, and I was like, Ray, like, dude, I'm like, I'm leaving here and going back. Like, I'm in the military. I'm not going to do crack or whores or anything like that. And he would always be like, he'd be like, yeah, I got like 7 kids. I'd be like, you know, it'd just be like, he would just take, and then we'd take me to this bar where I just was kind of an odd duck there. And we'd go there and hang out, you know, and I would just be like, man, I'm going to get murdered here. Like straight up. Like, and Ray always had my back and we hung out and then, you know, ended up moving on and going to the military. And I never really kind of went from that to barroom hero there for a period of my career. And that was, you know, that was about it, but that's kind of my short claim to fame. I actually last year was going to fight. There's a guy here in Montana. He's a champ. He's like the Montana champ. And I like watched this YouTube video and I was like, dude, I'll beat the brakes off this dude. And like, I know I can beat the brakes off him. So I start boxing. There's an old boxing trainer here, just old. He's like 80. And so he's like working with me or whatever. And he's just like, dude, you're going to, you know, like, I know I'm gonna kill the dude. So I'm working out training and I was riding a horse in New York City for this photo shoot. And I got hit by a taxi cab and like blew my knee out kind of during that deal. So I ended up not doing it. So yeah, that's kind of my Ray Mercer fight story. I love boxing. It's the greatest sport. It's finally making a comeback. You know, look, there's a lot of bums in the sport right now too. And they're not like back in the day, the Muhammad Ali's, the Mike Tyson's, the James Tony's, like they would fight anybody, you know, Riddick Bowe's, like they would fight anybody. My favorite fighter of all time, I have to say, probably Vander Holyfield, like no better guy than that guy. And he beat Muhammad Ali's record. But the problem is he was too nice for boxing. And I have a near and dear for that sport. As a matter of fact, I have some ideas that someday, you know, we're raising money right now for these two ranches out here in Montana. And it's a big capital campaign. And my goal is to put a fight gym out here in Montana in the remote mountains in the middle of nowhere, just like Muhammad Ali did, right? And there was no media. There's no nobody. You went in there and you trained. You discovered yourself. And so, and then integrating some of that stuff, you know, into our program, because I think that, you know, standing in front of another opponent is there's something different. You're not out in the field. You're not out there. You're not going to pass the ball over to Timmy or whatever. I don't even know the football guys, but like you're facing yourself, right? So that's the metaphoric, like man in the mirror. It's not really the guy across from you. It's you. It's you understanding you and believing in yourself so much that when your head rockets off the canvas, you know, that's not the end because you don't actually believe it. You don't believe it. Like, you know, and you know, those guys, when they get up and they come back and they win from these insurmountable odds, that's not from just training. That's not from just whacking the bag, you know, or, you know, just doing road work. Like that's a portion of it, but it's from a deeper belief. You know, that's why Muhammad Ali was so incredible, because he was really talking to himself to a point where it didn't matter what happened in there. He just believed in himself so much. And so I think that belief training is something that we should do, whether you're getting in the ring or not. And so boxing to me is something I absolutely love and adore. And I think it's the most pure and honest sport, you know, just get in there and beat the shit out of each other. It's awesome. my buddy team guy came out here, and we were in Afghanistan. We're watching the MMA deal. And he's like, yeah, dude, like, yeah, these guys like all one dimensional with their boxing or whatever. I was like, dude, I'll knock you out cold. And he's like, oh no. So we're all in the team room together in Kandahar, Afghanistan. It's like 10 o'clock at night. We're watching like UFC or something. I don't know. This clock's all screwed up. And so we're there. And so everyone's like, do it. Like, come on, like down in the gym. And so next thing you know, we're down in the gym. I'm like gloving up, mouth guard in. You know, he's kicking the bag, and he's just like, it's on, like, we're going to fight, and everyone's down there. And so my buddy's like, gets us, you know, apart. He's like, all right, let's go. So he's kind of, before he could even do anything, I just was on him. I beat the living shit out of him. I'm like, busted his nose. He's like bleeding out of his like lip or whatever. I'm on top of him. He like gets up, and he was at my house for the 4th of July this year. And he was telling that story. He's like, you know, dude, that was totally not cool what you did. I'm like, what do you mean, dude? It's a fight. Like, you want to fight me? Like, let's fight. He's like, yeah, but I was like, you know, yeah, you're right. Like, and I would never fight you ever again. And I said, I only would box, and he was only going to do MMA. And it's kind of like was a legendary fight or whatever. And I'm sure any MMA out there could probably just kill me. But
champion.
What's that?
Kandahar champion.
The Kandahar champion. So I actually did win something besides a busted nose and loose teeth and a bunch of cracked teeth over my... the dentist was like, what happened to your teeth, man? I was like, yeah, back in the day, it was just like, you know, roll up some little pieces of paper towel if you didn't have a mouth guard. And that's kind of like what you rolled with until your mom would give you $8 to get one. You know, times were tough.
We usually ask for a homework at the end, tip that you can give the listeners, but I think you've given a ton of tips. Do you have more tips to give? Do you have a tip that you can give someone?
You know, here's my tip. If you want change in your life, first of all, there's two things you can do. One, if you seriously want change, and that's a conversation you have to have it with yourself. Like, how serious am I, right? It's like when I did that TED talk, I got in this argument with this lady because she was doing a talk on like fat people or whatever. And I was like, nah, I'm going to push back. And she's like, excuse me. And I was like, yeah, I mean, we're here to have a debate and talk about our TED talks. And, I think you're full of shit. I was like, I don't think it's a genetic condition and da, da, da. And she's like, well, I was like, let me ask you a question. If I walked from New York City to LA and I ate nothing but carrots, would I lose the weight? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, so it's a choice. So it's a choice, right? Now, it may not be an easy one, but it is simply a choice. There's always a choice. And, you know, so my point is that there always is a choice. You know, people want to change, but you have to wake up and do the opposite of what you were doing the day before. And you have to turn 180 degrees and do that with calmness, confidence, and consistency. You have to do that. And maybe it's the micro change. Maybe we're not going a full 180, but maybe in the next 3 months, I'm doing a 10 degree change. And then I'm going to keep changing. And then the world begins to open up for you. And next thing you know, you're going the opposite direction from where you were. And then two, spend time with yourself. You have to know, you have to spend time with yourself in situations, whether it's on your mountain bike or it's running or it's meditation or it's doing sauna time or whatever it is, or establishing a quiet time or establishing sleep schedules or whatever it is, spend time learning about yourself, because there is a voice that will speak to you. And if it tells you to go like steal stuff from the grocery store, it's probably not the right voice. But like, that's true. I want to caveat that. I'm going to get sued. So, but the voice inside of you, like it wants to be heard, right? It knows what to do. There is a roadmap. The only way you can discover what that map is. And the key to your individual success is by spending time with yourself. And it's not on Instagram. It's not anywhere else in the world. It's with you and you alone, because there's two lives you're living, right? If you're married, you're living a collective life. You got kids, you got responsibilities, but then there's your individual life, which never ends. So you don't trade that in for a collective life. You still got to work on you. You still have to develop you and become the best version of yourself. And you're not going to do that without putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. So those are my two tips for the day. And don't box with Ray Mercer, because he will kill you and end your boxing desires to box anymore for years. So
dude, this really was awesome. And I'm personally going to take that advice and follow suit with it. So Micah, awesome. Thank you. Truly, yeah, truly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. Thank you both. Marcus, dude, anyone I met you, man, you're a special guy. Slacklining, jumping around in Costa Rica, doing backflips. You're the most like athletic dude I've ever seen. I was like Spider-Man. And you're a really, really good person. And I'm happy to call you my friend, bud. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you. Guys, have a great day. And Mike, I'll hit you up private later on as well. So,
yeah. Right on, brother.
All right. Are on Instagram though, Micah?
Yeah, Micah5326. And my foundation is at Heroes and Horses, H-O-R-E-S and horses.org. So, by the way, you guys got to pimp our marathon we're doing in September. So I'll send you the link and stuff like that.
What's the date? Is it virtual or is it?
It's virtual, but we're also meeting here in Montana to do it as well. So it's called the Change Through Challenge Marathon, and it's September 6th through 8th, 2020. And you basically have, you know, really like at the core of our philosophy at Heroes and Horses, the idea that struggle gives our life value and purpose, like I was talking about. And so we like this idea of shared struggle that brings people together. So we're hosting a virtual marathon basically to raise money for the organization, September 6th through 8th, 2020. And we're going to be asking participants to complete 26.2 miles, of course, and there's three options. So option one is the one-day challenge. So just knock it all at one time. That's what I'm going to do. There's people doing it on treadmills. There's people all over. You're going to be able to log in, and you're going to be able to interact with other people that are actually doing the marathon. Option two is a three-day challenge. So over the course, you know, you could do, let's say, for example, 8 miles on September 6th, 10 miles on September 7th, 8 miles on September 8th for a total of 26.2 miles. Or there's a group challenge. So you can create a team of people up to three, and you can pull your miles together to equal 26.2 miles. So, you know, we're trying to raise 250 grand to support, you know, the organization. There's prizes, the event sponsored by Yeti Coolers. And there's some pretty amazing, you know, prizes for the fastest times as well, which I won't be getting any prizes, but I will complete it. I don't know what kind of condition I'll be in after.
I'll do it. Last
year, I'm in.
You in? All right. All right. I'll send you the link and everything. It's gotta be awesome. I have not been training for this. I am an Ironman. I have done the Ironman, so I know how to suffer. And it's going to be pure suffering. I looked at the other day and I was like, my daughter like grabbed a hunk of my back fat and was like, "Dad, you never had this before." And I was just like, oh no. So I'm facing myself. The roadmap is light and inside of me is lightly covered with a little fatty sheen. So I gotta, you know, this will be the catalyst to kind of get me going again.
I will do it with you. Last year, September 7th is when I did the Grand Canyon. And I was thinking I wanted to do something September 3rd and September 4th are rough days for me. That's when I lost my son. And I want to do something every year for that. So it couldn't have come at a better time. And I will do it. Shane, you want to do it together?
Yeah. I'm in.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's do it. It's gonna be awesome. Hey, look, you know, I'm always like, I need a new like adventure buddy because my other ones have kind of fallen off. So when I like get these harebrained schemes or you get them, you always call me, and then, you know, and then we'll just keep doing that until we're so old and decrepit, we just become liabilities. I kind of feel like you kind of need that buddy. We're like, hey, dude, I got this race where you got to eat 1,000 pickles and run 200 miles. And you're like, I'll do it. Like, so you got to have that gut check every single year. You got to have a gut check every year. until you're just literally like blowing in a straw, just racing. So, or you wind up paddleboarding.
We're doing this. Call my brother back. That's what he's trying to do to you.
I'm gonna call him. I'm not doing paddleboard, so I'm out of that.
No. He's trying to get you to go to Arizona to do the Grand Canyon October 2nd. That's what he's trying to do.
Okay. I'm gonna call him up. Let's do it. I appreciate the time, and I'll send you the information on the marathon.
Absolutely. Love to talk.
Marcus, take care, guys.
Take care. Thank you, sir.